Welcome to the Sunflower Conversations, where we explore the hidden disability sunflower and its role in supporting people with hidden disabilities.
Welcome to the Sunflower Conversations with Chantal. I am joined by our sunflower friend, Emma Cathrow. Emma has recently graduated with a first-class honours in German and sociology from the University of Aberdeen and is now a research associate. Emma also has type 1 diabetes and is going to share her story of living life with the condition. So thanks for joining me, Emma. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So can we start off by you explaining what is type 1 diabetes and how does it affect you?
Yeah, sure. So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. Your pancreas creates a hormone called insulin. And if someone has type 1 diabetes, then your immune system attacks those insulin cells so that they can't work and they cannot control your sugar levels. So if you are type 1 diabetic, you have to then take insulin either in an injection with pens or via an insulin pump. So that you can try and control your sugar levels. So basically you have to be your own pancreas because your pancreas won't do it for you.
I see. Okay. And how old were you when you discovered that you had diabetes? What led you to get that diagnosis?
So I was very young. I was 8. I was a month short of turning 9 because I remember telling all the doctors that when I was there, that it was my birthday soon. We think that I probably had diabetes for at least 3 months I was showing symptoms of, but we didn't know that's what it was. Because as an 8-year-old, you have a busy life, you're growing, things maybe aren't, that seem unusual, maybe weren't unusual as an 8-year-old. So I didn't feel massively unwell. I do remember a few times I would say like, oh, I wasn't feeling well, I was maybe feeling a bit dizzy. But nothing massive. A few times I would be out with some friends. I remember one time specifically, it was one of my friend's birthdays and we went out swimming and then to like a theme park. And during the swimming, I did not feel well. I felt really unwell. And my friend whose birthday it was, her mom was a nurse and she was like, oh, just have some fruit pastels, you'll feel fine. And I did, and boom. Half an hour later, I felt fine. So now I know that actually my blood sugar was low. And just because she happened to give me some sweets, I felt fine again. And then there were some other more, what I now think are obvious signs. I was drinking a lot more. Like I was so thirsty all the time. And then because I was so thirsty, I was going to the toilet all the time. I remember at school, I just didn't like going to the school toilets. I don't know why I didn't like it. And all of a sudden I felt I had to go because I usually would have avoided it. But I had to go to the toilet all the time, which my teachers were noticing as well. And again, in the mornings, I was drinking loads, which I normally wouldn't do because I didn't drink in the morning. So I didn't have to pee at school. But I started doing that. And just generally drinking a lot more. I started to wake up in the night to go to the toilet, which I would always sleep through the night. I would never wake up. And I think the biggest, so obviously there was all of that, but I think the biggest sign that my mum finally noticed that something really wasn't right here was at the start of the summer, we went down to visit my auntie in England and she bought me my first ever pair of jeans, which I thought was amazing. I was a cool kid. I now had jeans. I was really cool. And then I think it would have been the start of September, and every September we would get like family photos done. And of course I wanted to wear my cool new jeans because I hadn't really worn them much because I was told I had to keep them for good. So I was like, okay. So I was allowed to wear them. So I was so excited. And I put them on and they just fell off me. They did not fit. I'd lost so much weight over the summer, but we hadn't really noticed because as an 8-year-old you're kind of growing anyway, so we hadn't noticed the extent of how much weight I'd lost until I tried to put these jeans on And I couldn't, and I was just sad I couldn't wear my jeans, but obviously there's a lot more of a serious problem going on. So my mum thought, like, with the weight loss, this kind of feeling unwell, the drinking and going to the toilet more often, that I maybe just had some kind of urinary infection, something like that. So she phoned up the doctors and they agreed. So we did a urine sample and we put it in the morning. And I'm pretty sure by the afternoon they phoned back and were like, you need to come in right now. So we went in. I think we did a few blood tests and then I was sent up to the hospital that evening and they diagnosed me.
So it seems to have been quite a rapid acceleration.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And the symptoms weren't sort of lingering for years as such.
No, I mean, as I say, there's definitely, when I look back now, those probably about 3 months before it, there definitely were signs. How long it was actually going on before that, can't be entirely sure. Yeah. But yeah, definitely a couple of months.
So is it hereditary in your family?
So type 1 diabetes can be, as far as we're aware, I'm the only one in my family. So we're not entirely sure. I know they're doing a lot of research into how type 1 diabetes does appear. I say it can be hereditary. I know of other people who it's from, like, their parents also have it, their grandparents also have it. But no, for us, it's just me.
Does it tie in with other autoimmune diseases? Do your family have any other autoimmune diseases? Not diabetes, no.
No.
And so you were 8. I don't know, are you early 20s now?
Yeah, I'm 23 now.
23. So knowledge of the condition when you went, it was quite quickly to be diagnosed, really. You had the urine test and did you feel like there was support for you? Because you were quite young at that point. Did you feel that there was support for you to navigate this new, you know, condition that you found yourself having?
I mean, in terms of outside support, I do remember there was not a community group as such, but there was like a parent support group that then also obviously met up with the kids. It was maybe only a couple of years and we only met up maybe like once or twice a year. Like there was like a summer picnic, but I don't remember there being a massive amount of support. But I mean, my parents were great support as we all kind of had to figure out together. My mum kind of knew of diabetes. Her old flatmate was type 1 diabetic, but I mean, that was talking 20 years prior and my mum wasn't involved in the day-to-day things that she had to go through. And obviously technology and just the condition and the understanding had changed so much from then anyway. So even if she had known lots, I'm sure it would be different anyway. So she had a bit of an awareness. She kind of knew it, but she didn't fully know.
Can we talk about that, you know, the day-to-day? How do you manage it? You mentioned there's a pump or there's injections. Mm-hmm. So would you mind explaining to me, like, what is a day like, or, you know, for you?
Yeah. So it's a 24/7 condition. Let's say you are basically having to replace an organ. You're having to be your pancreas. So I have... Well, I'll go back to when I was first diagnosed. When I was first diagnosed, I was put on insulin pens, which is an injection pen. And I had a finger test kit where I had to like manually like prick my finger, take out some blood, put it in a test strip, put it in a meter, and it would tell me the blood sugar. So I would do, when I was first diagnosed, it was more strict, I guess, as I was still trying to find a routine, find what worked. So I was very limited in what I could eat and when I could eat it. So I have like, there was no more snacks anymore, which I didn't like as an 8-year-old.
As an 8, nearly 9-year-old. That's really harsh.
So it was more like you, and my dosage of insulin like was the exact same every day. So I would eat like the exact same things or similar things most days. So each meal there was an injection and a finger test.
You have to do that. You have to do that 3 times a day.
Yeah. So there was the 3 times a day for the insulin that you're eating with. So that was like a rapid acting insulin. And then in the evening, you'd also take a long acting insulin, which would kind of like, it would use its effect like trickling over the next 24 hours as a kind of like background base. So there would be at least four a day. If you wanted to eat more often, you could, but you would take another injection, which I didn't want to do. The only time you could eat a bit more is obviously if your blood sugar dropped, then you need to eat something to come back up again.
Yeah.
So I was on the pens and the finger tests until just before I started high school. So a good four-ish years. And then I got moved onto an insulin pump, which I'm still on now. So the insulin pump replaces having to do injections, and it means I could snack again, which was great. So now I can show you actually.
Yeah, can you do, well, yeah, describe, because we're in an audio format. But do show me as well.
I mean, this is my insulin pump.
It looks like a little eye. It looks like the first
It's like what iPods used to look like.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit smaller than your phone, but you get, there's different ones, like different makes that are a bit smaller. There's some that, so mine is connected with a tube, and then there's a cannula that goes in. I usually have it on my stomach, but you can have it on your legs, on your back. But there's other types of pumps that you can get that like actually stick on, like there's no tubes, it just sticks right on you. So you might see them on people as well. So that whenever I eat now, I just use the buttons to dial up how many carbohydrates I'm eating, what my current sugar level is, and then it knows all my settings, because we had to figure that out when you get put on the pump. Like, it figures out your sensitivity and your different ratios, and then it figures out exactly how much insulin to give me, rather than I have to eat a certain amount at a certain time with a certain number of units on a pen. So it just gives you that freedom to eat when you want and eat different things. And it's also constantly like every, I think it's like every 90 seconds, it'll make a little click, and that's it giving me like a tiny little bit of insulin. Because if you remember, I said there was the pen I had in the evening that was like a long insulin that would work for like 24 hours. So that's like what this does. It just trickles away all the time. So that's really good as well. And it's a lot easier to try and change your ratios on this rather than figuring it out on a pen. And there was lots of different calculations that I never understood. whereas here it just does it all for you.
Well, I've got two questions. So one, you mentioned that you have to input how much carbohydrate you've had.
Yeah.
How do you work that out?
Sometimes it's a bit of a guessing game. I remember there used to be a book, I think it was called Carbs and Cals. There was this book that we were given, and it had like loads of different foods in it, and how much this, like if they have like an apple, and how much an apple would weigh on average, and then how many carbs on average would be in that apple. So there was loads of different examples in there. Otherwise, like on food packaging, it has in like the nutrition table, it'll have the carbohydrates on there. Sometimes it's just like per 100 grams, and what you're eating is not 100 grams, so you do have to do a bit of figuring out there. I would say that a lot of the time I don't actually trust what is on the packaging, because I take what it says, and then I end up either way too high or way too low, because it's not actually being that accurate. So I think as well, I just kind of have a general knowledge of like how much really is in each thing. Like I know in one bit of bread, I mean, brands may vary, but on average it's about 20 for one piece of bread, like something like that. Like I just know.
Your pump,
yeah,
is that waterproof? Can you go swimming with it?
It is waterproof. I've never actually kept it on when I've gone swimming, although to be honest I don't swim that often. But you can, I think it's waterproof up to like 10 meters or something, but it is on 24/7. Like you have it on when you're sleeping, you have it on in the day, you have it on no matter what you're doing. But you can unclip it if you want to, like for going in the shower, for example. It is waterproof, but you're not going to hold it the whole time, so you can clip it off, and then you have like another little like clip to seal it up, just so that you don't get water going in through the cannula.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Was that painful to have that fitted?
No, so I should explain it more. I change it every 3 days. I do it myself. It's not, the cannula is only, I think it's 0.6 millimeters deep. Like, it's really not that far at all. So yeah, I change it myself every 3 to 4 days. You have to fill up an insulin vial. You have to put it into the pump. You have to prime all the tubing to make sure the tubing's like not blocked or anything like that. And then you have, it's just like a little contraption device that you just push a button and a needle will go in with the cannula just to like pierce your skin and get it in. But the needle comes right back out again. The needle does not stay in you the whole time. It's just used to get the cannula in. And then you're all set for a couple of days.
So this is a good advance in technology as far as you're concerned with having more freedom.
Definitely, yeah. I should say as well, I forgot to mention, I'm also on a Freestyle Libre glucose sensor. So I don't do finger tests anymore. Well, if my doctor asks, I do. I'm doing finger tests. So it's a little circle on my arm. It's not very thick at all. It's just a little white circle. Some people put stickers on them. But there are, more often than not, it'll be on the back of someone's arm. So those, you get like a little, again, it's like the meters we used to have for our finger tests. But you can use that, or there's an app on your phone. That's what I prefer to use, just because I've already got my phone. It's just easier to, rather than having to carry your phone and the meter. So I use my phone and I just press the button, scan my arm, and it'll tell me what my sugar level is. And it puts it on a nice graph. It has arrows whether your sugar is climbing or dropping, or if it's quite stable just now. And the great thing on it as well, it also has alarms. So you can set a base, like a low alarm and a high alarm. So if your sugar passes either of those, whether it's too high or too low, it'll alarm and it'll let you know that you need to scan and you need to have a look at what's happening. And another great part of it is that you can, like your friends, family, whoever you want, they can also download the app and they can receive the alarms. So
that's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, so I have it set up. So I live with my boyfriend now, so I also have it set up on his phone, because say it did go low and I was somehow, if I was really, really low, then it's potentially I could faint, I could pass out. So if it was to constantly be alarming that I'm low and I've not cleared the alarm, then he would know, okay, she needs help, I need to go see what's happening. Thankfully, that's never happened. But it gives him peace of mind as well that I'm okay.
That's a really good sort of, I don't know if expression is fail safe, but really, really important. So let's talk about the dangers of not managing your levels properly.
There's quite a lot. If someone is new to being diabetic, I would not recommend Googling it, because you will get scared. There are horror stories, and yeah, bad things can happen, but it doesn't mean it absolutely will. I think that took me a while when I was getting a bit older and I could understand the condition more. I did get a bit freaked out, being like, wait, what? Like, what's going to happen to me? If you really, really don't control it and your blood sugars are either consistently too high, consistently too low, or just a roller coaster of the both of them, it's really not good for your overall health. It can then start to affect your other organs as well. It can lead to kidney problems. It can lead to, you can end up with blood circulation problems. Some people have to get feet and toes amputated because the blood circulation is totally gone. It can be up at the top as well, like in your eyes. It can affect your vision. It can, if your sugar levels aren't well controlled, it can affect the nerve endings in your eyes, because they're not receiving the blood flow properly. So it can lead to either distorted vision or even blindness. So it really can be serious. If your sugar levels are too high consistently, it can lead to a diabetic coma. It's called diabetic ketosis. I know the short form is DKA. I can't remember what it stands for. But you can end up in a coma if your sugar levels are too high, because your body just can't can't function with so much sugar.
Actually, I think I've heard that when you go for your eye checkup, that they are able to detect things like diabetes, aren't they, through the eye?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as part of my routines, I get an eye check every year to check that how my vision is doing, because yeah, they can tell with the nerve endings.
Have you had experiences where you haven't managed it properly and you have fainted, or you know, people have had, apart from the fruit pastel experience before you diagnosed?
I have been known to be a bit of a fainter, not always because of diabetes. Sometimes I just get a bit squeamish and I'm on the floor. But I have been a bit, I think it's maybe only once or twice I've actually fainted from a low blood sugar. I do get quite shaky and it can feel dizzy, but not like fully having passed out, but thankfully I've always been able to be quite well controlled. I mean, there's always good and bad days, but never had to be hospitalized again since my original diagnosis.
That is good. So the tech that you've got, and you've obviously are knowing your carbohydrates quite well, because it sounds like the dangers of not managing it properly are critical.
Yeah, it can be.
And how has type 1 diabetes affected your education and social life when you first were diagnosed, and you're having to do the pens and everything, and it sounds like it was quite restrictive of eating the type of foods at a certain time every day. What impact did that have on you?
It definitely made me feel different than other kids. And I suppose now I don't see it as much of a extra thing because I'm just so used to it. I don't remember a time without it, to be quite honest, which is a good and a bad thing. But I suppose it just made me maybe more like cautious than other kids my age were. Like, they would just eat whatever they wanted and I wouldn't or couldn't. I mean, a few times obviously I did think, nah, okay, I'm just going to eat it, and I had to pay the price later, but that's just what I did. And I learned the hard way that that's not good, because I'll just feel really, really rubbish later when my sugars are way too high.
You had to kind of do it for yourself, get there.
Yeah.
Time, sort of thing.
I wouldn't say that it held me back in any way. Everyone around me has always been really supportive about it and really understanding. And I don't think it's held me back in terms of education or social life. Just a little bit more cautious, I guess.
What happens if do you drink alcohol?
I do, but not massively. And that's probably because of being diabetic. So alcohol can really, really mess up your sugar levels. When you drink alcohol, it initially makes your blood sugars spike, like more, for me anyway. One time I spiked like more than triple the like recommended number of your sugar levels to be. So you really, really can spike, especially with like spirits, and also if you're having fruit juice, they're really high in sugars. So that's just going to put you right up. But then the thing with alcohol is, so you initially spike, but a couple hours later you will pummel to the floor. You'll be so, so low. So you really do have to be careful with what you drink and make sure that you're eating with it as well, and trying to avoid the high sugar drinks if possible, or like the spirits and things, if you can avoid them. Not that I do that, but you should avoid them. And then to make sure that you eat something, even if your blood sugars have already gone high, make sure you eat something that is full of carbs, because you will still drop anyway. There was one time I'd gone up, so the recommended blood sugar is to be between 4 and 8. For most of the time, that's the numbers. And my sugars were already up at 16 from having alcohol. And I had like a really big portion of chips, like on this night out on the way home, I had a portion of chips because I knew I needed something carby. And in the morning, I still dropped way down to like 2.5. And that was like being at 16, having loads of chips. So if I hadn't had the chips, I would have been even lower than 2.5, which is already very danger low if you're going any lower than that. So yeah, it can definitely be a juggling act having a drink, which is why I don't do it very often. But I know of other people who really do like a drink and they have a much better routine figured out because of that. So it definitely is possible to try and find a way that works for you.
You are listening to the Sunflower Conversations with Chantal. To learn more about the sunflower, visit our website. Details are in the show notes. Do you, like, with your, particularly with your, the equipment that you've got, your arm and your pump, do you experience problems when you're traveling? I know that you've done a lot of advocating for sort of safe travel and you offer tips and advice for other people who may have diabetes or other non-visible conditions and things for them to think about. But would you mind sharing with me what are those considerations that you have to take?
Yeah, so the main thing that I've always found is going through airport security with an insulin pump, with insulin vials, with insulin pens, with needles, especially I think when I was first diagnosed, so we're talking 10 plus years ago, there was not as much of awareness of any hidden condition. So trying to go through an airport with these things, the security were really, they're quite rude about it. They didn't understand it. They didn't seem to care that I was only, well, 8, 9, 10. And I was just trying to get through a metal detector, but you would set it off or you had too many liquids and they had all these questions. And it really was quite off-putting in that, like, why can't you just be understanding? It's not my fault I have all this stuff with me. I wish I didn't have to have this stuff with me, but I do. And you're just trying to get through. And an airport is already quite a stressful, busy place anyway. So yeah, the kind of interrogation that you got just for having your medical equipment, whatever that may be, with you was really quite mean and not very nice to go through. So obviously now when I've got the pump as well and the sensor on my arm now, I understand why they have to be a little bit cautious of any like devices that are coming through. I totally understand where they come from, and it's definitely got better over the years. But remember the very first time that I was going through the airport with my insulin pump would only been about 13, 14, and it was like I was trying to bring through, like, I don't know what they thought I was bringing through. It's like they thought I was bringing a bomb. Like, I was not. I'm a child. It's just an insulin pump. But I think just because they hadn't seen one. Insulin pumps were kind of new at the time. Like, I was lucky that I got on it quite early, so they had no idea what it was. They wanted me to take it off. I didn't want to take it off. They wanted me to like press all the buttons before they even touched it.
How old were you at this point, sorry?
I would have been 13 or 14.
Oh God, so subconscious well at that age.
With my family, we're clearly going on holiday, and they just really didn't want me to go through with this insulin pump. So I had a doctor's letter with me. I had all my stuff with me. It's attached on me. I'm willing to hold it. And I'm pretty sure they ended up having to get a manager or something to come and like see that it was.
What airport was that at?
Pardon?
What airport was that at? Do you
remember? That was Edinburgh at the time.
Edinburgh.
But I will say Edinburgh Airport is a lot better now.
Yeah, good. They're members of the Hidden Disabilities Sunflower.
Yeah, it's a lot better now. And I think just with the general that so many more diabetics are on the pumps, that there will be more going through. So it's not as unusual, or it's more common to see them. So I don't think it's as questions like, oh, what's that? I've never seen this. Like, I'm sure I never see them on a daily basis, I would hope.
Yeah. How does it work? Like, so you've got your pump, but you presumably have to get the insulin and pour it into the pump, or it just comes with one unit. Once it's empty, then you change the cannula and the pump.
So it's you've got a reservoir that like you have the little plunger and you it has a, like a needle on it, and you put it into the insulin vial and you just pull it back and fill up the reservoir, and then that click there you get like a little lid that clicks on and the tubing comes out of that, so then that little reservoir full of insulin goes into the pump and then you attach it on.
You are listening to the Sunflower Conversations with Chantal. To share your story, details are in the show notes. So if you're going away for an extended period of time, you've got to take several vials with you.
Yeah, you would take a couple of vials. So the vials that I have are 10 mil vials. So they're under like the, because obviously for traveling with an airport, you're only allowed 100 mils. So you're like, you can take them. But then they're meant to be kept in the fridge. So I have these, they're called Frio bags or cool packs. That are for like keeping medical equipment and supplies cold that need to be refrigerated. So I'm sure there's many other medications as well that need to be. So it's supposed to stay in that so that it stays cold. Sometimes some airports can be a bit like, oh, what's that? Why is it wet? And like, just a cool pack. It's not science. So yeah, sometimes they insist that you move the vial into your little clear bag whilst it goes through the scanner, and for what, the whole 2 minutes that it's out, it will be fine. So yeah, you do have to take quite a few vials with you.
So do you think that that people know enough about it? So for example, I keep thinking back to the fruit pastel scenario, but then also thinking about you when you went out with your friends and you were doing what you could to try and balance it. Is there ever a time where, like, giving somebody, well, presumably there is, giving you a fruit pastel would be the worst thing to have?
Oh yeah.
How would I know whether, because I have been in the company a couple of times of people, not friends of mine, just sort of strangers, and they've started to sort of present like a bit that they're shaking a bit, and you can see that there's sort of like an all body experience going on, and maybe like a little bit faint, and they need to sit down. And in both of those incidents I have offered to get them a sugary tea. But when is the right time to offer a sugary tea? And if your sugar levels are too high, what can be done?
Yeah, so it can be, if you don't know the person well enough to know their symptoms, it can be hard to know if someone is experiencing high blood sugar or low blood sugar if they're not feeling well. So if you don't know and they're not able to tell you, then you would definitely need to figure out what their blood sugar is before you do anything. I think a lot of people, maybe more so when pens were more the insulin pen injections, when they were more the thing, like I remember a lot of people were like, also if you're unwell, I just use your own pen and give you an injection. Like they're thinking along the lines of an EpiPen for like an allergy. Like I just like stab you with it and like give you insulin and you'll be fine. And I'm like, well, no, because if I collapse, it might be because my blood sugar was low. So if you give me insulin, which lowers your blood sugar, that's going to make it worse. Like you definitely don't want to do that. But again, if someone collapses from a high blood sugar, which isn't as common, I don't think, but it absolutely could happen, or someone might be unwell enough that they can't really talk properly and communicate very well, then obviously they would need insulin and not a sugary tea. So you definitely would need to try and figure out their blood sugar, whether that's with the finger test meter that they have to do one on them, or if they have some form of sensor to try and check on that what they are before you did anything. Because yeah, if you don't know which way it is, then you could potentially be making it worse even if you're trying to help.
Yeah, and presumably, unless that person has lost consciousness, they will have an
they should not
knowledge of their own body.
A lot of diabetics know exactly what their signs and symptoms are and can act upon it either at the time or try and prevent it. Or again, there's a real push to get a lot of diabetics on like the glucose sensors that can alarm you so that hopefully these scenarios don't happen. Mm. Or if they do, like it's a lot easier to see what is happening, especially like if you've got it set up to alert your friends and family, then they instantly know which one it is. But yeah, a diabetic themselves will know their own symptoms and how they're feeling. Although in saying that, once you've had the condition for quite a long time, you kind of lose those senses a little bit, especially if you're not very well controlled and you're constantly up and down, it'll then start to, you'll lose the sense of it because it's so normal that you're not able to detect it as much anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I can still detect when I'm going low. I feel it. It's a really weird feeling. I don't really know how to describe. So it's low blood sugars, hypoglycemia. So a lot of people just call them hypos. I cannot try and explain what a hypo feels like. It's just such a weird feeling. But I definitely go a bit shaky. I can get very sweaty, very hot. And if it gets really low, I don't make sense. Like I'm trying to talk, I'm trying to tell people, yeah, but my words will just get a bit, not slurred, but a little bit muddled, and I can't really think properly. All I can think is sugar. Like I need sugar.
Yes.
But I don't really feel it when I'm high anymore, unless I notice that, oh, I'm really, really thirsty. And then I'm like, wait, am I just
high? Is
or am I high thirsty?
Yeah, so high is the unquenchable thirst.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. So do you have in your bag, a potato or some fruit pastels or something?
Oh, there is. All of my friends know that there's always sweets in my bag. There is always sweets or chocolate or I have glucotabs, which are literally just like these little tablets that are just sugar sweets. They're not the best flavor, but they do a really good job.
I think I've seen those. They sell them in the chemist, don't they?
Yeah, they sell them there. I get mine on prescription, but yeah, you do get them. Or there's dextrose as well. You get those. Yeah. So yeah, I've always got them. All my jackets, all my bags, all of them are full with the glucotabs and little sweets, just in case I need anything when I'm out and about.
What do you think about the sunflower?
I think the sunflower is an amazing idea. I think it really helps to just give people a bit of confidence that, like, if something happens, there's a bit of a sign that there's actually something else going on here. For example, if I am to, like, say I did pass out somewhere on a street without any other signal and looking at me normally, you wouldn't know that I am diabetic and that I need a lot more to look at medically if I was just found somewhere. I think it helps with normalizing it as well, because again, to look at me, you wouldn't know that I have another condition. And walking around day to day, maybe I am walking past other diabetics and I just don't know it. And it just makes you feel not that it's weird, but it makes you feel more accepted, and there's other people who have other hidden things and that's okay. And you don't have to hide them. Because for a long time, I always would, like when I had my pump, when I first got it, I didn't like it because people could see it. And I would always try to put it in my pocket or clip it somewhere that wasn't as obvious because I didn't want people to see it. Whereas now, I don't care if people see. I don't care if people see the tube hanging out of my pocket. Like, it's there.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think the lanyard is the same thing of just, like, having it there for awareness for yourself, but also to, like, normalize it, hidden disabilities as well and conditions. And definitely for traveling is when I mostly use it for traveling, especially independently. It can be a little bit scary, like, because obviously when I was a bit younger, I would always have my parents, and if there's any issues, they would kind of fight it for me. Whereas doing that on your own now can be a bit like, oh no, what are they going to say? Are they going to be awkward? Am I going to have to prove it? Am I going to have to get my doctor's note? Like, are they going to try and send me away and not let me go on the flight?
So
having like the separate queue at airports helps, just because I'm a little bit stressed already about the whole thing, so it's a little bit quieter. The staff are a lot more understanding. You can just take that little bit of extra time to like get the liquid bags out. If I've got my Freo, like the cool pack with insulin, I can sort that out. I can get my pump sorted, so they know, like, because they usually take a swab, and I can, that's fine, and I have it ready. And just to take the time to explain to them, because obviously the security at airports are quite fast. They want to get you through, they want to get you moving. So if you're trying to get their attention to say, just to like flag it, and because I normally don't go through the like the metal detectors because I just set them off anyway. So like just to bypass it, when you're doing that in the normal queue, they can get a bit annoyed, and even people around you can get a bit annoyed and that you're like holding up the line, which isn't fair because it's not your fault. You're just trying to get
through. Selfish, aren't they? We're always in such a rush.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that we ask people who see the sunflowers, just be a bit patient.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely part of it. And to just be understanding that just because to look at first glance, I don't have anything, but you don't know that I'm actually tubed up to a little device that is saving my life every day. Thank you.
If you are interested in any of the advice discussed in this podcast, please follow up with your GP or healthcare practitioner.
Are there any charities that you have used in the past that if other people who are diabetics are looking for support, would you recommend any particular charity?
I know that there's support groups with JDRF. They are a diabetes charity and they offer support groups. So they're more, they're definitely support groups for younger people. So they are really good just to reach out to other diabetics, and because sometimes you feel you can't unload it to people around you because one, you don't want to burn them, and two, they don't understand entirely. They can understand to a point, but it's a lot different talking to other diabetics who can understand entirely what you're talking about.
Did you say that was young people, for young people this week?
Yeah, they definitely have young people support groups. I'm not aware of any others. I mean, I know there's a lot of, not a lot, but there's a few like Facebook groups for diabetics, of either by locations or some by age, and just where people can put questions. And I've not met anyone like through that. I'm sure you could if you wanted to. The Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. That could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. I'm sure that Diabetes UK would also have support groups as well.
And Diabetes UK have just launched their 4Ts campaign for Diabetes Awareness Month. Can you just quickly explain what that entails?
Yes, the 4Ts are like 4 key signs to look out for that could be signs of type 1 diabetes. So the 4Ts, I actually had all 4, but we were unaware of them, so didn't put it down to it. So you have thirst, toilet, which is obviously associated with being more thirsty, tired, because it's exhausting if your blood sugars are all over the place, and thinner is the other one, which again I had with losing a lot of weight. So if anyone is ever experiencing all 4, some of these symptoms a bit out of the blue and can't really put a reason why they're feeling those things and these are happening, then I would definitely get checked out by a GP, because there could be lots of other reasons, but it could be diabetes.
Perfect, thank you. And thank you so much for your time as well, Emma.
Thank you very much for having me.
And it's great to hear how you're still able to travel and it's not holding you back from getting a fantastic degree. And congratulations in your new role as well.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to share your sunflower story or conversation, please email conversations@hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. Find out more about us or listen to this recording again by checking out our insights page at hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Please help, have patience, and show kindness to others, and join us again soon, making the invisible visible with the Hidden Disability Sunflower.